everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Mara, big news out of CBS. Don Diamond, who has played Bold and Beautiful's Bill since 2009, is returning to Young and the Restless, where he had had a 20-year run as Brad Carlton as part of the crossover story between the two soaps. Now, I spoke to Don at length for an interview in the new issue, and he told me that, you know, he had a mixed reaction to getting the call to return to Genoa City. He explained to me that Y&R had meant so much to him for so many years, and his unceremonious exit, my words, was a shock to him and hurtful. So the idea of coming back there caused him to reflect on, you know, everything that went down. Ultimately, though, he realized that leaving Y&R was one of the best things that ever happened to him because Brad Bell ended up creating the role of Bill for him. And then he got, you know, kind of on board and excited about it. You know, it was a really interesting chat, and I am definitely looking forward to seeing Bill on Y&R.
Yeah, that's going to be really fun. And I will eat up any inside jokes about his time as Brad or him looking like Brad that happened to get sprinkled into this, the scripts. I mean, enough time has passed that maybe it would go without mention, but I'm hoping that they do take the chance to include some winks to all of his years on Y&R. And I appreciate that in his interview with you, Don was so candid about having hurt feelings about how his dismissal from Y&R went down. You know, as much as actors, I think, intellectually understand that these kinds of decisions have to be made for all sorts of reasons that have nothing to do with the quality of an actor's work, I think you would have to be almost Buddha-like not to feel some kind of way when you've been a part of a cast for as long as Don was on Y&R and then you're killed off. You know, I've spoken to many actors over the years who were in that boat and found it equally painful. And it doesn't work out as beautifully as it worked out for Don in a lot of instances, you know, because Don not only landed on his feet, but I think it's fair to say has totally thrived on a whole new level as Bill. You know, he came onto that show guns a-blazin' and has been such a key character ever since. It's hard to imagine the trajectory of B&B over the last 12 years without him and, of course, his character's sons, Liam and Wyatt. But I think this is a really, like, lovely full circle moment for him and for fans of both shows.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And I was such a big fan of Y&R in the 80s when he first joined. So it's almost strange to think that I barely think of Brad anymore because Bill is just so dominant on B&B as a character. Now, this issue is also our February preview issue, and there is a lot to unpack there. I mean, the shows are really pulling out all the stops based on what the head writers outline for us. So on Bold and Beautiful, the paternity test results on Steffi's baby will dictate everyone's fate, and Carter will learn the truth about Zoe and Zenday. Over at Days, a shocking murder will rock Salem, Allison Sweeney will return as Sammy, and Laura Horton will come to town with some very key information about Jack and Gwen. General Hospital, a double wedding of Anna and Finn, and Peter and Maxie may prove to be double trouble, and Franco's condition will get worse. And on Young and the Restless, Adam and Sharon's bond will be exposed in a very public way. So I don't really know what that means. I don't know if we're going to see like Adam and Sharon get together, but I mean, she just married Ray. So I'm going to hold off on judging too early, but I mean, come on. I feel like there's so many other marriages that are on the rocks like that because of cheating. I mean, what is happening? You know, we saw Liam cheat on Hope, Chad cheat on Abigail, Ned cheat on Olivia. Then we have the people who are just dating cheating, like Steffi cheating on Finn and Elena cheating on Nate. You know, it just suddenly feels like a lot.
I actually love a well-told cheating story. You know, I think inherently it's a relationship conflict that has like so much potential to mine for huge drama, whether or not it leads to like a paternity who's the baby moment. But of course, it takes finesse to tell well. You know, when you've got a well-established and beloved couple and one of them strays, the setup has to be plausible. Otherwise, it just screams, you know, plot over character. And when that happens, you've lost me as a viewer. It's just so hard to invest when, like, the infrastructure of a pairing is undermined for the sake of one of them cheating for storyline purposes, as opposed to the storyline circumstances unfolding in such a way that you can understand how the trust was breached, you know, in this way. maybe the most glaring example of that was on GH when, over the course of what seemed like a day in poor Tarl's time, Dante ended up in bed with Valerie because he thought Lulu slept with Dylan. That was just kind of ruinous to the characters involved. But by contrast, I think GH took its time to show some cracks in the marriage of Ned and Olivia. They hadn't been on the best of terms when she took off for Switzerland to see Dante, and Ned was already sort of wary of her growing friendship with Robert. So I think it was a lot more palatable to buy that when he found out they were sharing a hotel room, he jumped to the wrong conclusion and drowned his sorrows with Alexis, and one thing led to another. Now, to your point, the ink is barely dry on Sharon's marriage certificate. So even though her connection with Adam obviously predates her even meeting Ray, and they have a marriage of their own under their belts, and to say their connection is exposed isn't the same as saying either of them cheat, but I definitely share your curiosity about how YNR is going to approach this Adam and Sharon beat.
I mean, I don't mind an infidelity tale. I prefer stories that are more grounded in reality, actually, and certainly that is one of them. What I do mind is that I feel soaps do have this larger-than-life romantic ideal, so when there are so many happening at once, it could kind of be a little depressing. But it does yield great drama on camera, like what we're seeing now on Days with Gwen and Abigail and Chad, and our guest today is part of that story. It's Emily O'Brien, who is doing amazing work as Gwen and has a lot going on, so let's see how it's all going. Hi, Emily.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
I thought it was the perfect time to talk to you because of everything that's going on with Gwen.
Yes.
Yes. But let's start with Emily. So you were born in England and spent the first decade of your life there. So tell us about your childhood.
My mother is Middle Eastern, from Iran, and my dad had met her in 1978, and they had to leave because of the revolution. He was working on oil rigs in Iran, and he said, come to England with me, and that is not at all where they pictured their life. We were actually supposed to go to Germany, and I would have been a German girl. But that's where we stayed. And then we moved over to the States when I was in the sixth grade. And that was a very difficult transition for me. because, you know, that's like a very, those are formative years. I didn't know how to fit in. And I was still going back and forth a lot to England because my grandmother was alive at the time and she hadn't known that we had moved. My dad thinks that it would have just been too much for her to bear if she knew that we had left England. So there was a lot of going back to England, coming back to the States. But we stayed through high school. And then after that, I started on Young and the Restless. It was almost 16 years ago, and that was 5 years. And then I went back to England, and then I studied, and I studied in France for a while. So I'm just, I don't know. I've just kind of been... I haven't like had one single solid route. I guess the place where I would call home now is where my parents are, which is down in the San Diego area. So I'm lucky that they're close to me now.
Yeah.
So I hope that kind of gave you a very broad answer there on kind of everything, not just my childhood. where I was born isn't that interesting. I was born in... a town called Bedfordshire. It was a lake about 45 minutes north of London. There's the Luton Airport. Some people know that. It's not the nicest place to grow up. But, you know, still got friends and family there. So we try and go back every year. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about my childhood, really.
Well, I'm curious to know how your family settled on California, which is obviously literally around the world from where they had been living.
Yeah. So my mother has a very, very big family. When they left Iran in 1978, they kind of split. So they went to, some came to England with us, some went to Israel, and the rest came to San Diego and LA. And so at that point, it was a decision between staying in England, going to Canada, which was where my dad was applying for work, or California, and he got the job in California. So that's where we ended up staying. Yeah, we went to San Diego at first.
So what was that like? Was it culture shock for you to move from England to California?
Complete culture shock. Especially when you're in sixth grade, you know, I had this my dialect was a bit more like this. It was a bit different to how Gwen speaks on the show. So this is how I was born. And, you know, coming to the States as a kid, kids just want to make fun of you. So they would like run around and chase me and say marker. And I'd say marker. And they'd laugh at me, or, you know, I'd get teased a lot. I didn't make many friends. It was difficult. My sister didn't have as hard of a time because she was younger than me. But then eventually I kind of, as I got older, started realizing where I fit in. And that was in the theater group, like the theater classes. So I started auditioning for plays and things like that. And that's where I was accepted. Where all the weirdos go, right? Yeah.
So how did you end up, you know, discovering your place there? Like, what was the first inspiration to get involved in theater?
It's weird. My earliest memory is when I was in England, they used to have these puppet shows at the Dunstable Market by my house, like on Saturday afternoons or something. And my parents would take me, like my dad would sit with me during this puppet. And it was like a big thing in a theater with lots of people. My mother would shop while me and my dad would watch the puppet show. And I remember being amazed because these guys would be on stage singing and they'd have puppets on their head, kind of like Avenue Q. Uh-huh. Yeah. If you're familiar with the way they do that show. And I thought, how are these people up here acting and singing and dancing and memorizing all these lines, and they're in costumes and they have these puppets? So I became like obsessed with the idea, and I started making my own puppets with socks and practicing at home. Yeah, I don't know. That's like the earliest kind of memory I have. And then I remember one of my teachers when I was still in England as well caught on. And she would let me skip, you know, like half an hour before class was over. She would let me gather a few of my friends to write a quick skit or a quick play. And one was like about King Tutankhamun, because we were studying that at the time, King Tut and Egypt. And I wrote this quick little 10-minute skit with everybody, and she let me perform it. And then next thing I knew, like, word was going around the school, and they wanted to put me in the Princess and the Pea. And then before I knew, I was acting at a young age. But for me, it was just so much fun. I don't think I really thought about it seriously until high school. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned that you joined Young and the Restless when you were 20. So tell us your casting story.
Oh, gosh. That's funny, actually. I knew nothing about soaps. And I remember the very first, I auditioned for Young and the Restless twice. And the very, very first time I auditioned to the one and only wonderful Marnie Sasha. And I had absolutely no clue what the heck I was doing. And I didn't know I had to be completely off book and memorized. I go in the room, she's completely off book. And that made me so nervous. It threw me off. And I completely messed the audition up because I thought, oh my goodness, the casting director knows all the lines. And here I am, I'm still reading off the page and I look horrible right now. And it was just not a very good audition at all. And she gave me very sage advice. And she said, listen, if you come in here again, you're going to have to be memorized, because the way that this show works is so fast, you have to know how to be off book and be ready for anything if we give you lines or changes or whatever. And it was the best advice I got. I did not get the part. And I went home kind of with my tail between my legs because I was so embarrassed. And then I think it was a couple months later, I went in and read again, this time for a different casting director. I believe her name was Beverly at Young and the Restless. This time I was completely prepared. Off book, I was ready for it. And that was for the role of a character named Jade. And all I knew was that they were going to set her up with Kevin. It was just supposed to be one or two episodes. And she said, I see that you're English. Could you maybe come back at 3 and read for the producers with your dialect instead? And I said, sure. So I did. And then they changed the name from Jade to Jana. And that's how she was born. And then my 5 lines turned into 5 days, and then 5 days to 5 weeks, which turned into 5 years. So I'm so grateful for that. Long time ago, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do you remember about, you know, coming in your first gig of that nature? You're under contract, you're working all the time, and the workload is so intense. What was that like for you?
Yeah. God, the one memory that kind of shines for me, I shouldn't say shines, it's just funny. I was extremely nervous, and Greg, he was so dear. He kind of took me under his wing, and he kind of, you know, told me how things go and how quickly things move. But I remember, because I was fresh off the stage, that was all I knew, really. I'd done like a couple student films and things like that. They had to keep telling me to talk quieter because I was projecting. Always projecting my scenes and my lines. And they had to kind of tell me, Emily, you've got a microphone right there. So, you know, you don't need to speak so loudly. So that was an adjustment, and just the pace. And back then, I mean, things moved slower than they do now. We had lots of time for blocking and rehearsals and to kind of, you know, rehearse with the actors in dressing rooms, and now there's none of that. So when I came to days, I tell everybody this, I don't remember my first day. I think I blacked out because it was just, it was like the whole day. I had prepared, and we get up there, and then we shoot everything in a matter of 40 minutes, and I almost fell over because I just couldn't believe that we'd gotten all the lines out so quickly, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was just like, okay, someone's got to just trust me, and I have to trust myself, and whatever happens, happens, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, when you were on Young and the Restless, who did you hang out with? Did you make any friends in the cast that, or did anyone stand out who helped you in those early years?
Yeah, definitely Greg. I remember Tracy also. She took me out to lunch one day, and I had confided in her about things going on in my life. And she was always so warm and wonderful. The same with, I became very close with that whole Baldwin Fisher family. Christian and I still speak from time to time, and Judith Chapman, and then, yeah, Adrian Franz, I remember, and Grazade. It was a great time. It was great. We were all, you know, I was in my 20s, and I felt so new to daytime, and it was a wonderful time in my life. I felt so blessed to be there and meet these wonderful people and play this very unique role. Jana was so different to everybody else on that show, and I liked it. I felt very comfortable playing this outcast. So I felt very fortunate to be there for 5 years.
You ever miss the streaks of color in your hair?
Sure, not so much, but you know, sometimes those were fun. They used to just clip them in every day. I still have them, actually. I have a couple of the purple and red pieces. They let me keep them.
That's a good memento.
Oh yeah, definitely. Imagine if they let Gwen wear them from time to time. That'd be nice. That'd be
nice. She can battle Kate for the hair.
Try and win Jake back with blue hair. Yeah.
When all else fails, clip it.
Exactly.
That's right. What would you consider the highlights of your run at YNR?
You know, I think towards the end, personally, I felt very connected to that material where she was starting to kind of lose control of herself and see Kevin slipping away from her and gravitating towards Chloe, and just that threat that she felt kind of, you know, sort of made her go off the deep end. That gave me so much to play with. And they gave me so much leniency on what I could do as the actor and how to play her. They let me go as far as I wanted. It was a very good, like explorative, if you will, side for me, something I hadn't really played before. And then I guess I remember going through a phase where they put me in all these like period piece outfits, and she went through this very eclectic stage in her life, and she got married in the ashram. That whole time period was so much, so colorful and so fun, and I was in this storyline with Graz and Adrian. It was like we were this foursome couple wreaking havoc in the world. Yeah. Gosh, it was so long ago. I don't really remember much else, to be honest. It was all wonderful.
Those are some good standouts, though. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So when you did exit and your time there came to an end, do you recall, like, were you upset or were you kind of ready to move on? Because to that point, that had really been the bulk of your professional experience.
Yes. I remember exactly where I was. I was on a run and my agent called me and said, yeah, so listen, they're killing you off. And at first I felt total, I was very upset. And then after I let it digest, like I went on running and I kind of sweat out my anger a little bit. And I thought, you know what, this is meant to be. It's okay. Everything has to come to an end. I was 25 and I had such a deep desire the past couple years to just travel. I was desperate to go back to Europe. I wanted to go back and study seriously. I wanted to do other things. And I had started doing quite a few video games and I was exploring with voice. And I thought, okay, this is my chance. This is my time. So that was when I kind of decided I'm going to leave and I'm going to go back to Europe. And I did. I went back to London, lived there for a while, and I studied out there. I made absolute lifetime friends, the most incredible memories of my life. I went to Africa twice. I studied French in France. These were all things that I wanted to do. And I knew the only way I'd be able to achieve these things was if I was completely free. So I took advantage of it. And I continued acting. I did a movie in Thailand. I was out there for a month. And I'm very, you know, in the end, I do think it was meant to be. I needed that time for myself to kind of develop into who I am now and kind of discover myself, because all I had known was Young and the Restless. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And it put me in a very vulnerable situation because I went back, I went to Europe by myself. I was completely alone and I had to kind of start fresh and meet people on my own and go through dark periods to get myself into higher periods. So it was a very, very positive time of discovery and growth. And it was a very enriching time for me. It just all happened the way it was supposed to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds great.
Yeah, it's great.
Now you also did fall into the world of video games and voiceovers, which kept you very busy before coming back to soap. So tell us about that aspect of your career.
Yeah. So that was kind of a surprise. Back in 2007 or 2008, actually it was when I was still on Young and the Restless, there was a break in between where they let me go for, I can't remember, 3 or 6 months or something like that. And so I tried to find my own work. And I remember seeing this thing where they were looking for an English actor who was brunette, who could maybe possibly resemble an actress that looked kind of like Keira Knightley. And I thought, okay, well, I mean, you know, I could possibly go out for that. And so I reached out and I said, you know, what's this for? And I didn't know much. They said, we want to take facial scans of you. And I went in, I think they paid me like $100 or something. And they took a load of photos of me and they stuck my head in this box that lights up. And I made all these funny expressions and I left. And it was, you know, it was fun. I met everybody and everyone was great. And then they called me back and then they kept calling me back to do more of these scans. I had no idea what I was doing. And then one day they said, you know, we really like how we work with you and the structure of your face and your ability to emote. Can we bring you in for this new thing? And I said, sure. And I found out later that I was testing something that had never been done before. Essentially, what we did was I was the first face ever to do a markerless performance capture. And essentially, that technology went on. I was testing the technology for Benjamin Button's Avatar, and I had no clue. And it was all the genius work of Paul Debevec, who ended up winning a Golden Globe for his work. So I fell in with this incredible group of people. And, you know, I remember one day they took teeth molds and got more facial expressions of me. And later I found out that my face was the face of all the people in Grand Theft Auto that would get run over like that. Oh, watch out, watch out. You're going to hit that. That's my facial expressions. Wow. So I just naturally accidentally fell into it. And I remember that when that video went up, it was like the third watched video of the day. It had just broken records. And next thing I know, they're flying me over to Germany and France to talk about it and my experience. And I had no clue what to say because they would ask me technological questions. I'm like, listen, I'm just an actor. They called me in here to do facial expressions. I don't know how to answer these questions. But that opened a huge door for me. I remember I got invited to the Duchess of Angoulême's castle in France. And I'm sitting with her talking about this thing that I did, which was just this job that paid me $100. And I'm thinking, how on earth am I here right now? This is just the strangest thing. And like the creators of Jessica Rabbit were there, or Roger Rabbit, sorry. And all these incredible animators. And I thought, you know, this is truly an experience of a lifetime to be part of this. And meet these very talented people. And that opened doors from there. I got an agent and that's what I've been doing the past 10 years. I feel very, very, very blessed. To be doing animation and video games and voice. So I still do it. I mean, if I'm not working on days, I'm doing a video game, you know? So yeah, I love it. I'm very happy to be able to do both now.
It's so incredible. And it also seems like in an odd way, such a nice fit with a little girl who was so enraptured by puppets.
Yes, I know. How does that tie in with puppetry? My sock puppet. Yeah, I know. I'm thinking
pretty cool.
Now.
So, Of course, you did end up coming back to daytime, and it seems like you had a couple brushes with that possibility along the way. I know that you were in contention in 2017 for the role of Samira in General Hospital, who was the Turkish woman who was passing herself off sort of as Edward Quatermain's illegitimate daughter. What do you remember about that potential casting?
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I was so nervous because I hadn't heard anything from the daytime world in so long. And I didn't think I was quite right for it because she's Turkish and I'm half Persian. But regardless, it was so fun to go back in. And I remember walking in and I could see all these familiar faces on the walls and pictures of people that I knew. I just wasn't right for that. But when did you say, I don't remember when that was.
2017.
That was 2000. Ah, okay. I don't remember much about that. She didn't have to speak any Turkish either, I think, which is probably why they were able to bring me in. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't really look Middle Eastern, though. I think I look more English. My sister looks much more Middle Eastern than I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you obviously stayed on Marnie's radar because you told me that you came in to read for the role of Sarah Horton, which went to Lindsay Godfrey. So what do you remember about reading for Sarah?
Yeah, again, I was so nervous about that too. I did a screen test with Greg Vaughn. I was shaking. I mean, it was just so crazy being up on the stage again. And again, like the familiarity comes rushing back and all this adrenaline filled me remembering what it's like to be on that set. But ultimately I felt like I just wasn't right. Like I played the role the way I felt fit me and it was fine. But I mean, Lindsay, she's so wonderful at playing Sarah. It just wasn't right for me and it's so right for her. So that was also meant to be the way that worked out. Yeah.
Well, so tell us how ultimately the job of Gwen did come about.
Yeah. So my agent called me, I think that was September maybe of 2019. And he said, Marnie wants you to go in and it's for this role of a lawyer. And I can't remember, her name was Zoe maybe. Somebody had remembered the name recently.
Yes, another
Zoe. Okay. Zoe. Yeah. And I thought, okay, all right, here we go, another role. So I went in and I guess what had happened was the actress had left or had to take another job or something. And so she wanted me to do it. And she threw down like 12 scripts in front of me. And she said, okay, here you go. You think you can have this memorized by next week? I almost had a heart attack. Because remember, I haven't been back in this world for 10 years. And I'm used to like months of rehearsals now with games. So I'm just panicking inside thinking, how on earth am I going to pull this off? And I went home and I just tried to clear my schedule for like the next week as much as I could. And I went to work and I mean, went to work on the scripts, I mean. And then I got called in to meet with Albert, and the producer, and to do a wardrobe fitting or something like that. And I came in and I see Marnie in the hall and she's being kind of quiet and like, okay, you know what? Can you just wait here a minute? Just wait here. And I sat in a chair outside of this office where she went in and spoke to Albert for like 15 minutes. And I'm hearing them on the phone, they're having phone calls and I'm thinking, oh my God, here we go again. This doesn't sound good. Something's had, they're like going to choose a beautiful tall blonde instead of me. And finally Marnie opens the door and she goes, okay, Emily, come on in. Like with that kind of ominous tone. And so, I go in and Albert says, all right, sit down. We've got some bad news. And I just like feel this lump building in my throat. I'm like, oh God, okay. All right, just hit me with it. And he says, yeah, so we've got bad news. You're not going to be playing Zoe. But we have this new role named Gwen and we really want you to play her instead. And we want her to be British. So there you go. Wow. All right. And they're like, you can relax. You don't need to go memorize those 12 episodes. You're going to have a month now to kind of gather yourself and get ready for Gwen. So yeah, that was a whirlwind. And I remember going out in the hall call, and Marnie kind of pointed out Brandon Barash to me, and she's like, you're gonna be working with him. And I kind of go up to him and like put my hand out like, hi, I'm gonna be working with you. He looks at me like I'm crazy. So that's how that happened.
Well, what did they tell you, if anything, about who Gwen was or anything about her backstory?
Oh, I really knew nothing. I knew that she was kind of a mischief, and that she was involved with Jake, and that Jake was involved with the mob. I knew that she was English. I knew very little things that I picked up from the couple scripts that I had that I was trying to kind of put together. I knew that she likes ketchup. I knew that she befriends Claire. I knew that she bites her nails when she gets nervous. And I knew that it could be possible that she is not really crazy, because, you know, the way I had interpreted Gwen was that she is kind of somewhat deranged, but she likes to play with people and keep everything ambiguous. Yeah, so I mean, you know, not much. I knew very, very little, and I just kind of ran with what I had, and then things developed from there. And now I think she's really evolved and in a very different place to where she was over a year ago. Yeah.
When you think about how you first approached the characterization of Gwen versus how she has evolved, how has your approach to her changed or evolved along with, you know, the more information you've gotten about her?
I think now she has a lot more humility, because in the beginning I thought she's completely reckless. She can come into this town and she's not afraid of anybody. She had scenes with Marlena in the beginning, and she's kind of in her house and very just brash and honest and rude. And now I think that she has to swallow that back, because she realizes that if she wants any sort of relationship or friendship or camaraderie with anybody, that she's going to have to be vulnerable and step back a bit. So that's something I've had to play with, which I was nervous about, because you haven't really seen an emotional side to Gwen and a very open side to her. And you're about to see a lot more of that. So that's been interesting to play with and see kind of how that dynamic develops with people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, your first co-star was Olivia Keegan. What were those scenes like together in the sanitarium? And did she give you any like lay of the land tips about days?
Yeah, she was so wonderful and warm and welcoming. I mean, everybody really has been. And she was ready for anything. You know, I was kind of playing around with ideas. Do you mind if I do this? Do you mind if I do that? And she was so open for it. And if I did something that just kind of came voluntarily in the scene, she would go along with it. So I felt very comfortable working with her. And it's just such a fun, odd friendship, Gwen and Claire, something that you wouldn't normally think to pair together. So those were enjoyable. I actually wished for more scenes between Claire and Gwen. Yeah, they were fun. And she was just very reassuring. I was very nervous, as I said, that first day, but she's like, you've got this, don't worry, we'll run it as many times as you like. And she's so sweet. Yeah.
So you, as you mentioned, it seems like you had an inauspicious first meeting with Brandon Barash on some level, but then you started mm-hmm. working with him more. So tell us about Brandon and working with him.
Yeah, I mean, again, I feel very lucky to be collaborating with this group of people. Brandon as well. He's also just, I said this in an interview the other day, he is also just ready to play. And when you know that, it keeps things very fresh. And I like being in suspense and not knowing quite what will happen. He'll surprise me a lot, and it throws me off. And I really like that. I'm not attached to where I have a rehearsal and every single time it's the same thing. And so we kind of got into this groove, just trusting each other and knowing that I could do something that he wouldn't know was coming, but then he would just throw it right back at me and it would keep it so fun and sparky, you know? So yeah, I really enjoy working with him. He's great. And I thought that Gwen and Jake had some nice fiery chemistry, you know, they just have this back and forth tug of sex and fighting and sex and fighting and I want you and I hate you and come here and no, go away. You know, it's just so fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, it became quickly clear that Gwen had some sort of axe to grind with Abigail, as well as the whole Devereaux family. But what was it like to develop a dynamic with Marcy Miller?
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's so professional and, you know, she's so prepared. And I really, really respect her as an actress. She's just so eloquent in the way that she works. And, I, the same with her, I feel like I could go out there with her and know that she'll have my back and, I'll have hers. And, I don't know. I'm trying to differentiate between when we were working together pre-COVID and post-COVID, because now it's so unfortunate we have to rehearse through Microsoft Teams. So you don't get that like in-person bond, which I had made with her in the beginning. I was able to confide in her a lot about my personal life, and she's just such a wonderful listener, and we have less and less of that now, and it's more all, you know, most of the collaboration is done on stage. So I'm missing that. I can't even say I miss it, because I didn't get much of it because I was so new, but I wish that I could have more of a connection with Marcy and Brandon and Katie and Matt, you know. So, but we're doing the best we can.
Well, as part of, you know, Mission Takedown Abigail, Gwen, of course, became entangled, literally, in the case of their recent tryst, with Chad, played by Billy Flynn. Tell us about the dynamic that you have with Billy.
Yeah, Billy's great. He can't stop laughing when we do scenes together. He just gets the giggles to the point where sometimes we have to break a take because his little lip will quiver and he has to look away. I don't know. It's just so silly. And sometimes I'll just pile it on so strong during rehearsals, you know, and play this overly creepy creep. That just makes him feel all, you know, giggly and funny. And I don't know. We have a great time laughing together. And once we get to the take, we're like down to serious business. But no, he's so much fun. I love the way he works too, because we'll rehearse and he kind of saves everything for the take. So that's an element of surprise for me, because when I rehearse with him, you know, I kind of do it the way I see it kind of going on the set, on stage, on the day. But he'll just kind of go through running the lines, and then we get up there and he'll do something that I haven't seen. I go, oh my goodness, oh wow, okay. That's a surprise to me, which again keeps me on my toes and is really fun. So I love the way he works.
Now the viewers just discovered what Gwen's secret is, and it is that she is Jack's daughter. So you told me you did a lot of preparation for those scenes, which were phenomenal, but tell us, you know, how you did prepare and how you felt about playing that moment.
I was so nervous about that too, because there was, first of all, I put a lot of pressure on myself and I'm very critical of myself. And I wanted it to be justified. I wanted the audience to feel like they got the reveal that they were looking for and that everything was finally falling into place. I mean, this is a story that audiences have been following for months. And it's the first time that you really get to see Gwen expose herself. And I didn't want it to just be, here it is, ta-da. I I wanted people to empathize and kind of understand why. I mean, I'm not saying that any of her actions are validated by the drugging and all the turmoil that she created within this family, but I do want people to, or at least I was aiming for people to see that all of Gwen's actions were stemming from a place of true despair, and that her upbringing was so horrible, and she didn't have much of a childhood. She was impoverished. Her mother passes away. You know, it's a really awful way to live a life, and especially being brought up in a country where you're not from. She's from Chicago originally, Peoria, and she's now brought up in a foreign place in England without anybody, believing that her father has abandoned her. I mean, it's horrible if you put yourself in her position. And so I just stuck my whole head and my heart and my being into this script for 3 days. I Katie and Matt knew that it kind of pushed on like a personal note a little bit, like resonated with me personally. So it was kind of difficult for me, and I think that's why I put so much pressure on it. And Matt was there for me. He would send me articles to read, and Katie would tell me, you know, take a bath and Epsom salt really helps. And so I'd be in the bath with my script, and I'd go on a walk with my script, and I'd, you know, lay in bed with my script. I just wanted to completely immerse myself in it and see it differently every time I read it. And what came out on the stage was just totally authentic and from me. And that's what I was aiming for. And so I am at peace with it because I know that I put everything into it as authentically as I possibly could, because it was coming from a very genuine and personal place. Yeah. Sharing a lot with you guys.
Well, no, I thought, you know, Stephanie and I both thought it was really lovely, lovely work.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So I'm curious to know, like, when you found out that this was the big secret, and if you were surprised or if you expected it, and what, you know, what your reaction was.
Well, I had heard some things months ago, like maybe a couple months after I came onto the show. I'd heard possibly that I was Abigail's sister from Billy. And I thought, oh, how on earth is that feasible or plausible? And then I didn't hear anything about it for a long time until, Albert started dropping hints. And then I was able to see kind of the liaison and how this would weave together to make the story kind of come into fruition and have it go back so that it makes sense. So, yeah, I guess the surprise element for me was finding out the puzzle pieces, where they all fit together, and how that kind of made sense for Gwen to fit into this family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say that one thing I felt those scenes did, and again, because you did such a good job in them, you really did feel for Gwen. I mean, seeing her perspective, like the story was there and the performance was there. So it really did sort of put Gwen in a different place, at least for me as a viewer, that I did get the sense of, oh, okay, I get why she is the way she is.
Well, I mean, that's great to hear. That's what I was aiming for. I know that not everybody's going to empathize with her, but I was hoping that at least some people would be able to see the pain that she's gone through, which doesn't make her actions okay, but at least understand why she did them. So thank you.
Now, Mara and I talked about what it's like to play a character that maybe the entire audience doesn't like. Are you someone who cares about that? Is it hard for you? Do you just tune that out?
Yeah, that's been interesting. I'm not really a social media person, you know, but recently I've been getting messages and things saying like, oh, you're so awful. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not Gwen. I'm Emily. I'm not going around ruining people's lives. If they could differentiate me between Gwen, it would be a lot easier to digest some of the things that people say. But you know, yeah, I just have to, if things get a bit too snarky and they hit too close to home, I just kind of tune it out. I'm playing a role. I'm an actor. And, if you hate me, then I guess then that means that I must be doing my job right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So in a way, you know, the truth coming out feels a bit like a reset for the character, you know, that one chapter closed and a new one began. You know, as the actress playing the role of Gwen, where would you like to see her journey and her story go from here?
Well, I think from here, the only place to go now is resolution. I think that she's going to have to go through a cleansing where she apologizes for her actions and tries to resolve things that she's done in the past. And, you know, Gwen is going to be Gwen, and I think that it needs to be kept interesting. So I would hope that she could perhaps create a bit of chaos, maybe not to the extent that she did before, but maybe something light and fun where, you know, people's lives aren't being destroyed over it. But yeah, I think that the next step is definitely going to be even more vulnerability and just really trying to atone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can say for a spoiler alert, Gwen's going to have a pretty big February, so people will need to keep tuning in for this story. It's only going to get juicier. And we thank you so much for joining us today and talking to us about your journey. It was really fun.
Oh, good. Yeah, I had a great time. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure.
And look forward to seeing what's next.
Yeah, me too. I don't know what happens really past next week in the script. So I'm looking forward to it as well.
All right, well, have a great day. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Emily O'Brien for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.